Welcome to the HCI family of podcasts. We're your source for personal, professional, and organizational growth and development. We share our own original research, explore industry trends, and interview executives and thought leaders from across the globe. Join us for practitioner-oriented content around all things leadership, HR, talent management, organizational development, and change management. Maximize your personal and organizational potential with the HCI family of podcasts. Dr. Carrie Graham, welcome to the conversation today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, John. I appreciate it. I'm excited and looking forward to where our conversation goes.
Me too. Thank you so much for joining me. You're joining me from the North Carolina area. I'm south of Salt Lake City in Utah. And today we're going to be talking about adult learning and how we can improve adult learning initiatives within our organizations. Now, we know that there are major skills gaps in the labor force. For a variety of reasons. There's a wide number of causes behind that. But the reality is that we have skills gaps and the nature of work is shifting rapidly. Technological advances are being thrown at us constantly. And so the need for constant reskilling and upskilling is as high as it's ever been. And we need to develop cultures of learning within our organizations. And I think most leaders would agree to everything I just said. They'd say, yeah, we would need to do that. The problem is most organizations aren't very good at it. They either don't have good in-house training programs, or they try to pull in, you know, off the shelf stuff from outside, and sometimes it fits their needs, sometimes it doesn't. It's often very expensive. And so anyways, we're going to unpack this, explore this, and try to think through what it means to have really great adult learning for our workforce, given the current context and where we're going in the future of work. As we get started, I wanted to share Carrie's bio with everybody. Carrie Graham cares about your employees and clients. She's an adult learning strategist and training consultant who helps businesses improve learning engagement, information retention, and skill application. Dr. Graham turns adult learning and workplace learning theories into practical strategy to improve trainings in your organizations. And that's why she's on the show today. Again, great to have you, Carrie. Anything you would like to add by way of your background or personal context before we dive on in?
I think it's important for people to understand that I actually come from healthcare. So my first degrees are in healthcare. I worked as a clinician for a number of years and then transitioned to being a faculty member for over two decades. And that's really where, you know, when people say, the next question is always, well, how did you arrive at doing this body of work? Mm. And it really, as a healthcare provider, you are tasked, and I was tasked with asking really critical questions, looking very carefully at the situation, quickly developing an effective solution to that, right? That's the healthcare part of it. But then the curriculum development for two decades, you know, developing courses that meet, that provide students an opportunity to learn knowledge and skills, but that meet a national certification, it's not an easy undertaking. And so that's the path in which I've journeyed. And I was always searching for that one more thing. But honestly, John, I realized that during my doctoral work and learning about adult learning and workplace learning, that's when the fire grew inside of me and realizing that there's so many opportunities for us to improve the experience of employees.
Yes, absolutely. And my background in the HR space as a practitioner was first in training and development. And so my first love was in teaching and in doing training programs. And then I was pulled into academia as well, where I've been for the last close to 20 years now. So I don't have a healthcare background, but it sounds like we have, you know, kind of similar, you know, journeys in some ways at least. And maybe I'll start with a couple kind of terms that probably most people have heard of, maybe don't fully understand. We often talk in the higher ed space, even in the training and development space, and learning and development space within organizations, we talk about pedagogy. We talk about pedagogy, but there's this other term that some people aren't fully aware of, called andragogy,
Right.
which is kind of the adult learning side of pedagogy. Now,
Right.
we tend to use the terms interchangeably as practitioners oftentimes. I oftentimes people are talk say the word pedagogy when they're talking about adult learners. They mean andragogy. It doesn't really matter. I don't want to be someone calling out the wrong term or something like that. But just as a level set at the very beginning, those are two common terms. And andragogy really is specifically around adult learning theory, specifically learning for adults. How do adults learn? How do you motivate them in their learning? How do you
Yeah.
help them apply their skills? That's what it's all about. So I think that's what we're going to really tackle today.
Yeah, it is. And you know, it's interesting. You're right. So many organizations and individuals are using the language of pedagogy. And what I it is in fact the inaccurate language. However, when you look at, and I think you can appreciate this, John, when you look at the way in which people conduct trainings, they conduct it from the perspective of pedagogy. When you work with children, I talk about them as empty slates. And so you're teaching and you're providing and filling them up. And that's really the perspective that I think that we see so often in the workplace right now, as opposed to when we think about adults and adult learning, the andragogy aspect of it, the focus there is recognizing that adults have life experience that they incorporate in their current learning experience. And with that, they're not empty slates. They have their own mental models. They have their own ideas about, you know, whatever the topic is. And so I encourage people to take that shift when you're creating training and development in the workplace. It's recognizing that your people don't have an empty slate, even if they haven't worked in your organization before, or if they're transitioning into a new industry, they still have existing skills and experiences that they can draw from and apply in this situation.
And of course, we always want to meet people where they're at. For training to be effective, you're trying to identify a gap and you're trying to fill that gap and bridge to where, the skill needs to be to have the performance that you want to have. And so that means, by definition, you have to meet them where they're at. Otherwise, you're going to have a bridge that connects to the wrong place. And it's, so if you think about it in those terms, like the bridge to nowhere, the comical, political, anecdote that sometimes we point to, you don't want a training bridge to nowhere. You have to have clear connection from the people where they're at to where you want them to go, and absolutely, when you're talking about those in the workforce, they have a lifetime of experience. Even young people, Gen Z and young millennials, and I mean, even really young Gen Z who are entering the workforce, they have experiences. So tap into those. It only makes for better learning and application when you can connect back to where they're at, what they know, understand the mental models, understand the biases and the assumptions that may be being made. Sometimes you have to help people unlearn some things to build, to break it down to foundational points to where you can build, firmly. So all of this, I think it's a really great point that you highlight from the outset, because oftentimes that gets missed when I see organizations trying to put forward training programs.
Yeah, it does. And that is actually where I start when I'm working with clients, is I always ask them, it is the first conversation we have is, well, who is your end user? And without fail, every client I've ever worked with has rattled off demographic information. Oh, they're managers, they are, you know, this generation, blah, blah, blah. And I sit and I listen because it's information, but the reality is that's where they're stopping. And so I take them further and saying, okay, that's great, but who are they as learners? Let's identify that. Because if we can understand that element of who they are and what they potentially bring to the table or not, we can then build from there. And it's really interesting that once I start having a conversation with people around looking at your end user through the adult learning lens, though I can see the light bulbs going on. And without fail, they always say, I haven't thought of it in that regard, or I recognize, like, they're able to see the gaps in the training effectiveness and efficiency as well.
So let's talk more now about some of those other elements of andragogy that may be a bit different than what people typically think of when they think about pedagogy or teaching children.
Do you have a question specifically you want me to tell it?
So I would just love to hear your thoughts on that. So what are some of the things you see most commonly within organizations? You've already identified, the importance of the understanding people aren't a blank slate, tapping into their experiences. What are some of those other key points that you find to be most salient?
I would also argue at this time in 2024, because we all globally are, a very short period removed from a pandemic. We've got multiple generations in the workforce. The way in which the workplace looks is rapidly evolving and changing. And because of that, the individuals are experiencing rapid evolution of their social roles. Now, what I mean by social roles, just to be clear, is during the pandemic, during the shutdowns, I should say, we have had so many, I can't even count, individuals who are working parents, but now they're working parents at home with their children and becoming participants in their children's education. We also have individuals who, given middle age and even younger, are caring for aging relatives. People's social role has significantly changed, and that, in fact, has an impact on their ability to work, their capacity, their motivation. So if an employer is putting together, I need everyone to come on site, we're going to have a day-long training session. It may be the best training session available, but you are not attending to the needs of the individuals you want there, your employees. And so
And
that
can I also say it's probably not the best training ever.
it's not, it's not, it's
I mean,
not.
almost always you're going to have people scratching their heads. Why did I have to come in for this all day? Could this not have been a 1 hour thing, or
Could it have been an email,
could it
right?
have
Like,
been an email?
right. So I would say it's the recognizing that adults are experiencing changing social roles. I was talking to a colleague, and I was sharing with them how you may have a team of individuals, but each of those team members are at different phases of their life. So you've got someone who's straight out of, like, they're new to industry, new to their profession. They're eager. They're, and I'm making generalizations, but their motivation can be around professional development, professional growth. You take someone who's middle-aged and, they're thinking, okay, I've got another 15, 20 years to go. I've, have some lifestyle changes that I want to pursue. And you've also got people who are near the end of their career. And they're, some of them are holding on, like, I just need to make it to retirement. So how those three different individuals approach attending a training is very different. And you're doing yourself, employers are doing themselves a disservice if they're not acknowledging that.
Yes. And as I was joking a moment ago, you have to recognize that kind of mandated trainings where you're pulling everyone in, you better have a really good reason and purpose behind it. It better be really well designed, so it's worth people's time. And that may sound obvious, and it may sound like, well, of course that's the case, but we both know that that's not the case often, like probably most of the time.
Right. The other part of that is I found that when people, they're planning their training and they start talking about, well, I want it to be engaging and exciting and get, rah, 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 build morale, they engage in this practice of entertainment. And I get really bothered by that, but I encourage people that move away from the entertainment and focus on engagement. They are not the same thing. And if you really want people to stay committed and interested and focused and actually recognize that the training supports, aligns with their values, you have to focus on who they are and use that to engage them. But we all have been to some type of training where the approach was, we're going to bring in this good name to rah, 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 bring in a celebrity. And that's, it is entertainment, but there's very little application of that information being put in place, and definitely not long term.
Nobody wants to sit through boring training. So you're not suggesting that, we go to the other end of the spectrum and say, go from just complete pure entertainment to like just boring lecture. Nobody wants that. But you're saying nobody wants that. But it's the acknowledgement that the pure entertainment is not necessarily going to get you where you want to go. In terms of skill development, right? So if you've identified a skills gap and you're trying to address that skills gap, that means there is actual learning that has to happen. There's actual information, there's content, there's actual skill development that has to occur, application that has to occur, and just having someone come in and tell fun stories and who's entertaining and whatever, while it might be even inspirational or motivational, it's not going to
Fill the gap.
build a gap that you have to do. And so that engagement piece, it means, yes, you can still have entertaining content, but it has to be done in such a way that it's meeting the goals and objectives of the training program. And that happens through engagement. That happens through
It does.
involving people in the process of their learning so they can own their learning process, so they can take responsibility for what they're being asked to learn, and being shown and scaffolded, like shown a way that they can accomplish it.
Absolutely. And it's not, I'm picturing myself listening to you and I have this conversation, and I think it can appear that this is an easy lift. This isn't an easy thing to do. Of course, these are the gaps that we want to fill, and these are the learning goals and learning objectives. But when it comes down to it, it can be a heavy lift if this is a new transition. The other part of it is, excuse me, is thinking about it from a development perspective. So who's developing the experience of learning? And I like to refer to it as a learning experience. And then the other part of it is the facilitation. So who, in fact, is facilitating this? How are they facilitating it? Because what I have found is when we think of the word mandatory training, whether it's the employee or the individual facilitating it, there's this expectation or this mental model of this is going to be boring, it's going to be mundane, we just have to power through. When the reality is we can still have a mandatory annual training, but done, so developed and facilitated through a different lens, it can truly prove to be meaningful, fill gaps, build new skills, and achieve long-term outcomes. It is truly in going back, starting with the individual. So who is the end user? Doing a deep dive there, building the content. And lastly, which I always propose, is you have to support people and build their confidence in applying the information. Because again, that's the last part of it, or a final part of it is, yes, we've got them engaged and they're motivated. We've built this well-designed program, and then it stops there. Well, if people have a clear understanding, they don't know, it's questionable whether or not they know how to apply that information and that skill set, as well as make decisions as circumstances change. So if I'm a leadership development program and we're only talking about it from this one perspective and I go off and I do my job, I'm applying all the skills. But if we then have an executive change and the culture of our organization changes, am I skilled enough? Have I developed those leadership skills to make a transfer to this new circumstance? And that is without fail where it gets lost oftentimes. If that engagement is there, if the development of the content is there, it's that oftentimes I see there's a lack of supporting people in skill development.
Yeah, that ongoing skill development and application is key. You said something else I just want to hone in on for a second. Again, it probably sounds obvious to everyone, and probably everyone's thinking, well, of course we're going to do this. But you have to start with clear objectives. So if you've identified a skills gap, you have to then establish clear objectives connected to individuals. And that means fundamentally, and thankfully we have, more and more technology that helps facilitate this. But we need to have at least some level of personalization available in the learning process for adult learners, because everyone does, they're not a blank slate. They are coming from different points. They have different background. They have different experiences. They have different roles. They are different life stages, different career stages. Like the idea that we can just like have this prepackaged thing that we just have people show up to, and then they just do it, and then all of a sudden, voila, we're going to have a change in behavior or a change in performance. It's kind of comical that we kind of think that. Yet that's whether people think that or not, that's kind of the practice. That's how it often happens within organizations. And so having a more clear kind of set of objectives that align directly to individuals that account for and provide flexibility for difference in individual circumstances and the needs of individuals, that can like that may sound like that's not possible, but no, that really is. We're educators. Like you can do that. You can create a course. You can create learning modules. You can create individual standalone trainings that allow for that kind of individualized learning and application to meet the gaps that may be challenging to your organization. And so, if people who are watching or listening, if you're like nodding along, you're like, of course, we need to do that. So then I guess the question is, well, if people recognize that, why doesn't it happen? What can we do within organizations to really champion the type of adult learning strategies that you're suggesting so that we can have meaningful, impactful learning and development offerings to help reskill and upskill our people, so we can do cool stuff. So people can feel like they're empowered and fulfilled in the work that they do.
Well, that's, I think when we give consideration to developing a training, it happened, there are a couple reasons that it gets developed. It's reactionary. And so typically, if it's reactionary, it's often done very quickly. And so if it's developed quickly, there often isn't that focus or prioritization of the individual, the end user, right? It's really of we either need to prove that we address this problem or this mistake, whatever the case may be, or we have to fix this. So there's, I think that's part of it, so it's the objectives aren't always at the top of the list. The other part is when we have individuals who are end up being the ones to facilitate a training, many times they are also doing other things. So, in the case of we've got an annual training that we have to get everyone through in order to, maintain our credentialing, if those facilitators or those developers have been working on other projects all year and we're in the fourth or end of third quarter, fourth quarter, end of year, there's so much that they're trying to balance again. Oh, yes, let me, give some attention to who the end users are and develop these well-structured objectives to support it. That it often falls lower and lower on the list of priorities. And so that's something that I try to help people understand is that what is the reason this training has been developed? And even if because there's a skills gap, how did you become aware of the skills gap? What did a mistake happen? Was there a loss of revenue or a significant decrease in generating revenue? And so again, the training is reactive to the marketplace. Or was there a change in the organizational structure that mandates, again, it's those reactions to developing a training. It's critical. It is critical. So yes, it's a lot of we are having a very basic conversation about fundamentals, but as we all know, when work gets busy, the fundamentals sometimes go away, and that's what becomes our practice. It's not relying on the fundamentals. We're living in this world of AI, and we just are. And so there's this expectation for a lot of people is you need to get up to speed. You need to allow AI to do the work. I'm an advocate of no. That has its place, but that should not be the default. You still need to understand the individuals. And the way to understand people is to have conversation with them, engage with them. That's how you understand where they are. It's not simply looking at a list of what are the titles that need to go through this training. And so it's, yes, we need to revisit the basics. But also considering the fundamental insights don't always happen. Another thing that I wanted to share with along those same lines, which I've never understood, and John, I'm hoping, given your background, you can explain this to me. Budgets. The budget, right? So yes, we are going to line item X amount for training and development. As the year goes on, we got to pull money from someplace. Well, that's where we're going to pull it from. And I'm always amazed at organizations that say, we value our employees or we value our volunteers. But yet, their training and development program does not reflect that you value the people. It does. So often I've seen that. So can you explain to me why I think
I
I've
think, yeah, I mean, that's a bigger conversation, but I think there's a variety of reasons, but ultimately, I think it comes down to partly what you just said. Like the fundamentals of putting together good trainings, it's not like rocket science. Like you can do it. Like so I think we've all sat through really terrible trainings of people who consider themselves to be really great trainers. And so like everyone thinks they can do training, and you just can't. Can everyone learn how to do training? Probably. And learn how to do it well? Probably. But just like anything else, it's a skill, and you have to devote time to it and energy and resources to it. And so I think far too often, an organization and leaders, when there's a pinch with budgets, it's one of the first things to go, and they think, oh, well, this person, they like people, they like talking, they like being in front of people. We'll make them a trainer, and maybe they can be great. But that doesn't, I mean, there's so much that goes into designing and structuring a really great learning and development program and trainings that actually fill gaps and accomplish the objectives that you want to accomplish. It's not like rocket science, but it also isn't easy. It takes time and intentionality. And I think, just like many things in business, a lot of times the simple things that need to happen consistently to be successful don't happen because you're putting out fires, because you're running around like a chicken with your head cut off trying to meet whatever the demand of the day is. And things like training are seen as dispensable, or they're seen as, oh, anyone can kind of do that. And the reality is it's you just can't.
That last point reminds me of the idea or the practice that so and so has been doing the job for so long. We'll move them over to being a trainer. It's such a mistake. It's not a Unless that individual says, I'd like to step into this role and I'm ready to learn some facilitation skills, that's one thing. But to simply put an individual in that role, it's a bad decision. And it reminds me of a case last year. I was hired as a consultant for this state level organization. And I sat through, it was social services. And so I sat through one of their trainings of new hires on how they were training people with the system. And I'm sitting in the back and I'm like, I don't understand. I have no clue how to log into the system based on what they're saying. I mean, everyone has a computer. The attendees are looking around, asking each other, how do I do this? The facilitator is moving through like rapid fire. Oh, don't worry about that. I know it keeps showing up on the screen, but don't worry about it. It's not important. And I asked at one point, we were taking a break. I just went up and I said, I'm just curious, how long have you been in training? Well, I've been a trainer for 5 years, but I've been doing the job for 20. And so, I was a good choice in doing the training. And I thought, oh, okay, very polite. I don't ever want to disparage anyone, but I sat back down and I thought, what a bad decision. It's just bad. There's no polite way to say that, because not only do you set that workforce up for burnout and not being successful, but you've also set up the trainer or the facilitator for burnout and frustration and not doing well. And so it goes back to that your point about the budgeting. It's the simple things that we have to do and do them consistently that matter, but it just doesn't get done.
Carrie, well said. This has just been a fun conversation. I think we could go on for a really long time, but I also note the time and I need to let you go here and get on with your busy day. Before we wrap things up for today, I just wanted to give you a chance to share with the audience how they can connect with you, find out more about your work, and then give us the final word on the topic for today.
I invite people to connect with me on LinkedIn, Dr. Carrie Graham. My website is drcarriegraham.com as well. But for live conversations, let's chat on LinkedIn. The final thought is training is not about the content. It's not about you. It's about the learner.
I love it. Perfect. That's a perfect way to end. Thank you so much. Again, it's been a pleasure. I encourage the audience to reach out, get connected, find out more about what Carrie can do for you. And as always, I hope everyone can stay healthy and safe, that you can find meaning and purpose at work each and every day. And I hope you all have a great week. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the podcast. We hope you stay healthy and safe, and please join us again soon.